Good morning, good afternoon, maybe good evening to the Washed Up Walk-Ons fans out there. You'll notice that there's no music behind my voice, and you'll notice that from the title of this episode is a re-upload. We have realized that there has been a lot of new listeners, especially since last year when Big E dropped Hawks by a Million on national TV and kind of gave us a bump, as they say, in the WWE industry. And even before then, a lot of new listeners since kind of the middle of the pandemic and just over the last couple of years. And we've been wanting to re-upload some of our old episodes that really hit, some of the more popular ones with some of the more popular guests, for those who have not taken the chance to go back and find those in the list of 300 plus episodes that we put out and make a point to listen to them. Today we are dropping that. We found a nice little spot where Drake was traveling over the weekend and there isn't a lot of current Hawkeye news to talk about tonight. I had some stuff going on as well, so we figured what a good day to do one of these first re-uploads of the Paulson twins. Potentially, I'd have to look at the numbers, but probably one of the most listened to episodes, top 10 episodes out of 300 that we've ever done. One of our longest episodes. It goes upwards of 2 hours, I believe, 90 plus minutes for sure. I think I mentioned that in the intro, and you'll notice that a lot of things have changed since we did this podcast. This was, in fact, although it feels like one long month that we've been in with the old COVID, this was before the pandemic hit. This was February 6th of 2020, about a month before all that shit went down. And I think we're all on different microphones. My editing wasn't quite as good back then. Some of the background noises and fluidity of the podcast, you'll be able to notice, has changed drastically. Hopefully you can still get through it. I think you will be able to because the content is that good. And Landon and Levi are absolute legends. Again, one of our most listened to episodes ever. And one of the episodes that we've gotten the most feedback on. I think we got 100 messages when this episode initially came out. And it's because of these two guys. Two of the better guys that we've ever played football with. A couple decent players as well. Spent plenty of time on that offensive line around 18 and 19, 17, 18, 19. And Iowa to the bone. It's hard to hate these guys. I don't think they have a single enemy in the world. And now they're both doing super well in the business world as well, post-career. So we hope that you enjoy Landon and Levi Paulson. I know you will. Wash Up Walk-Ons Nation, we are back for another episode. And if we have ever asked you guys of anything, I ask that you guys today find a way to listen to all 90-plus minutes of this episode. Because the two guys that we brought on are absolute legends. They are the Paulson brothers, and they are a treat. Let's have a day. You know what it is. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans. This is episode 88 of the podcast. And it's actually pretty ironic that it's episode 88 because we are literally seeing double today. This is by far the biggest set of identical twins I've ever met.
Goddamn.
I guarantee you that my set of identical twins could whoop anybody else's set of identical twins' ass. I got mine for my mortgage, no doubt. But aside from that, honestly, these are two of the nicest souls I've ever met in my life. Two of the greatest teammates that have come through Iowa football. You know, they each individually deserve their notoriety and respect, but it only feels right to do them on the podcast together because that's just how they're known, man. They're the two coolest twins that I know, man. Landon and Levi Paulson. Welcome to the Washed Up Walk-Ons podcast.
Going on, Diesels?
Yes, sir, brother. You guys look
get a little bit of a diesel in you.
Diesel. We're gonna get into the diesel and all of that. First of all, you guys look great.
Thank you.
You always have. Yep.
We're trying to cut back on the calories.
Yeah.
Are we in weight loss mode already, boys?
Hard bod season.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. So does that mean the diesels are officially retired from football and they're moving on?
Retirement's a real thing.
Yep.
Boys, don't we know it.
What do you guys weigh right now?
305, and he's like 293.
Woo! Skinny boy.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
You know, it's completely different from anything we've ever known, you know, because, I mean, growing up, we just ate whatever was in sight. I mean, I think we got our phones in eighth grade and freshman year, you know, we got a smartphone and we started watching YouTube videos. And I think our only influence at that time was like strongmen and powerlifting. You know?
Hell yeah.
ESPN, you know, and ESPN3 and you watch like Brian Shaw and you like watch what Brian Shaw eats and you're like, oh, I want to be like that. You know,
so hell yeah.
Eat as much as you can.
But see, that's exactly what I'd expect out of you guys. You would watch Strongman and you would watch the steel outdoor games where they were chopping down them logs and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. You know, so it is, I mean, the retirement phase part of it, it's like a whole different lifestyle. Like we got calorie trackers on our phone, you know, and we're trying to get portion sizes that are normal for a person our size.
It's brutal.
Instead of Doyle's nutrition program.
How sad is it?
Just being done in general, you mean?
No, I mean, being done sucks, but, you know, when you can't eat whatever you want anymore, I think that's even more sad than being done playing.
Like Levi said, you know, it's just different, like, just making mindful choices, you know, instead of just eating and eating and eating. And, you know, we kind of had it mapped out where we were – drinking 2,000 to 3,000 calories, liquid calories a day.
Jesus Christ.
Everybody's like, oh, is it myth, you know, urban legend that you guys went through like a dozen gallons of milk in high school a week? No, it was 17 gallons of milk a week. Serious. Our parents calculated it out like a year spending on just milk alone. And they figured out that we spend more money on milk per week than they did on gas.
That's crazy because a gallon of, I guess a gallon of milk is
they're
about
pretty
the same
equivalent,
as a gallon of gas, right?
Close.
The Paulsons were drinking more milk than their cars were drinking gas.
Which
diesel bros, yeah, man. That just totally makes sense.
Yeah, the gas analogy fits really well because to anybody on the inside of the program, and maybe a lot of people outside as well. I mean, you guys would walk in the complex and I would greet you, either one of you, as what's up, Diesel. Like, we just called you Diesel.
Diesel or Paulson, because it probably is like the last month of my senior year that I was finally able to tell you guys apart. So it's always, hey, what's up,
Paulson? As we look at them right now, I don't know who is who. I don't.
Levi's on the right.
All right, cool. We got you. That's good. We know who you are. For those listening to this and not watching on the YouTube version, you guys are absolutely fucked because they sound basically the same. And they look identical too. They look identical. Are you guys actually identical?
What the fuck does it look like?
I've seen identical twins that don't look alike and fraternal twins that look exactly the same. So
exactly. You know, that's what, you know, most people, you know, classify us as is identical twins. But like when we were really young, we never really got like DNA testing done to see if we truly were identical.
But, someone's peeking me back.
She can come through. It doesn't matter.
No, that's all right. We classify ourselves as mirror image twins. So like I do everything left-handed. He does everything right-handed. My left hand's bigger than his right hand. His right hand's bigger than my left hand.
I'm taller. He's shorter.
And there's actually like books that my mom has on this, like on books of twins, you know, and the different kinds of twins, because it's like pretty phenomenal on how many different sets of twins there are. But I mean, just this past Thursday, we gandered back to Mobile, and we had an eye appointment, and the eye doctor saw Landon first, and then he came in my room and he saw me. He says, it's just so crazy. He says, your brother's left eye dominant. I said, he's like, that is really uncommon for somebody to be left eye dominant. You know, it's okay if they're left hand, you know, dominant. That's pretty common, but a left eye dominant person is pretty crazy.
And in being twins.
Yeah. You know? And in being twins. And he just thought that was pretty phenomenal, but it's like that our entire life, and our mom did research on it. So that's kind of what we classify ourselves as.
I literally never knew that people had a dominant eye.
I didn't either.
We're learning a lot on this podcast.
You know what I am picking back up on is you guys have a decent little accent going on. You guys got a little twang to you. Where does that come from?
Yeah, we had an interview in Mobile on Friday, and this guy
for a magazine,
and this guy came to our house, and his father-in-law was with him, and he said, you guys have a northern Minnesota accent. Like, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from right here in Mobile, Iowa. And I don't know what it is.
I mean, like, long story short, our influences, you know, that we've been around with our entire life. I mean, my dad's two younger brothers, they were big into the high school rodeo scene. I mean, they went – I mean, my grandparents bought them a trailer and two horses, and, I mean, they traveled the nation going to high school rodeos, you know, so – you know, they got a little bit of country draw to them. Well, then we met this best friend that we kind of grew up with in an eighth grade or seventh grade. We started watching YouTube videos. It was
Letterkenny.
Letterkenny. They started.
Oh, yeah, Letterkenny.
videos. And, I mean, we started watching those. We thought they were just comical, you know. And
Or The Legend of Chaw.
Or The Legend of Chaw.
Just like Legend of Chaw. We know about Chaw.
These random YouTube videos, you know, and we say, you know, and it's that's a filler word that we use, and it's like so weird, you know, and like not that you're going to notice it, but like it's a real thing.
We love it.
So many different influences, you know, that we've had in our life. And on our slang and our draw and our it's weird.
It was weird when you guys walked in the door from day one. You were just two big, cheery, identical redneck son bitches, and we're like, I don't know, who are these guys? And then you grew the hair out, and it was just like, I mean, these guys, you were Iowa legends.
Do you guys miss the long hair and beards?
Absolutely, you know. And I see all these old guys, you know, with long hair, and I'm like, when I get old, I'm growing it back out. You know, got to get a job first and look halfway presentable, but I'm growing it out.
But, I mean, I'd say you're right on that aspect, but on the other side of it, it's like, man, having 12, 13 inches of hair is a chore.
Yeah.
Literally a chore. You know, especially when you're wearing a football helmet every freaking day in practice and stuff. Like,
yeah, 10 inches of beard.
Yeah, right. That stuff gets matted, torn out, turns into dreads almost. It's difficult to brush out. You got to spend 15 extra minutes in the shower every day conditioning it. It's just like, gosh, it got to be a chore after a while. But
Jaleel grabs it and rips your face off. Yeah.
That's great. That's tough. Jaleel would do that.
So for the fans who don't know, you guys made the pact you weren't going to cut your hair until you guys finished, right? Once you guys started Iowa?
We did. We actually had a bet. I had a bet with Gervas. I had a bet with Jake Gervas. And
I said, hey, make sure you say the number's higher than it actually is.
Right. And I said, like, I said it was a $10 bet, and he's like, no, it was $100. And I'm like, all right, you know, whatever.
And this was probably before we were on campus, or was it when we got to campus?
Right when we got to campus.
Right when we got to campus.
And I said, I'm not going to shave my hair or cut my beard, you know, the whole time that I'm here. Jake says, I bet you won't do it. We grew it out for, what, 4 years?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it wasn't really planned, but it was planned because, like, our mom cut our hair and we never went back home to get our hair cut.
Yeah.
You know, and we had never got our hair cut professionally, nothing. And we grew our hair out and came to Iowa City and we didn't have our hair cutter. So
professional haircuts don't seem to be something in the cards for y'all ever.
That is a tremendous story.
Yeah, that's pretty great. The haircut thing and the hair became kind of a story in the Hawkeye community because of the way you guys ended up cutting it. Talk about that and the I'm pretty sure it was with Dance Marathon and that. Yep. So talk about that.
But so I'll start out because so once we started growing out this hair, I said, people are asking like, am I going to cut it? Oh my goodness. Somebody must be here. where I lost my train of thought.
You're cutting the hair.
Oh yeah. Cutting the hair. So people ask, when am I going to cut the hair? I'm like, well, when I'm done with football, you know, like done with football, whether that be, you know, towards the end of an NFL career or the end of my college career, whenever that was, I said that I wasn't going to cut my hair until that was over. Until my college football career or football career in general was over, I wasn't going to cut my hair. I wanted to change my identity when I went into the professional world, working for a business or, you know, whoever it may be. Well, then Landon's girlfriend comes along. And before that, like, we kind of had realized that, like, in Iowa City, people, knew that there was a long-haired, you know, bearded football player, but they didn't really know that there was two of us. And so, like, one of the first times I really realized that, like, a lot of people kind of knew or were aware of who we were, I was on what's that app? The Yik Yak?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody posted a picture of two fat hillbillies riding motorcycles. It was a cartoon. Riding motorcycles. And they had long hair and they had overalls on, like bib overalls. And cowboy boots. And somebody said, when you see the Paulson twins riding their mopeds through Iowa City, and it had like 270 likes or something. And it was floating. And I was just like, who posted that? You don't know. I think we could probably find it too. It's a pretty funny. It's a funny depiction. And it's pretty true for the most part, too fast.
And yeah, there's some people that cannot sneak around Iowa City, and y'all two were definitely one of them.
Oh yeah, it was not good. Even trying to be incognito, it was not easy. There's the Paulson twins, and we travel together for the most part for everything we do. But anyways, my girlfriend, she said, I think I'm gonna do Dance Marathon this year. And I'm like, oh, that'd be great. You know, it's your senior year. And she's like, I want to double my money. I want to raise – the most she had ever raised was like $2,400. She's like, I want to raise $5,000. You know, that's my goal for this year. And I just kind of threw the idea out there. Like, what if I, you know, as an incentive, like, what if I help you and I cut my hair if we do raise $5,000? And I was kind of thinking, like, maybe $5,000 is not enough. Like, that'll be way too easy. I'm like, okay, so $10,000, I'll cut my hair, you know. And Lexi asked Levi, like, do you want to cut your hair? Levi's like, absolutely not. I'm not changing my identity until I'm done with football. And so we pondered on it for a couple of days, what we were going to do. And we came back to Levi and we're like, Levi, we're serious about this. And he's like, okay. He said, I'll do it, but I'm not doing it unless we raise $15,000. So that was our goal. And then we went on a campaign and raise money. We went, I mean, pretty much all over the state. We went to Des Moines and we spoke at a luncheon. We went to Sioux City. We spoke around Iowa City. And I mean, we had donations from all over the world. And at the end of it, it was kind of neck and neck down to the last month. Like, we didn't know if we were going to make it. But as soon as we hit 10 grand, 15 was just like, it was a snowball. And it kept growing and growing and growing. And we ended up raising like $1,800 or $18,000. For pediatric oncology and the children's hospital, which is pretty, pretty cool. And it's pretty,
that's a legendary story.
Right. And it's even cooler, you know, because as athletes, they ask us to go over to the children's hospital and you witness it firsthand on how much of an impact that we as athletes have on these kids and how appreciative they are. They're going through the worst time in their life and they're so happy, you know, just to even see you. And see your face.
You walk through the door and it's just like you could make their worst day, you know, better. And you're a college athlete, you know, just that simple aspect of your identity is that you're a college athlete. You walk in the door, somebody's going through chemotherapy or had a transplant or whatever it may be, you know, and as an athlete, you walk through that door and, you know, sign an autograph for them, take a picture with them, and it means the world to them. So it was a really incredible experience, and, you know, we'll never forget that.
That is...
Man, that's a hell of a story right there.
I mean, you...
Hopefully the listeners aren't crying on us.
So I just got to ask one question. I got to ask one question about that. Was Gervais a scumbag and made you pay him because you lost the bet?
Guaranteed. Guaranteed.
Something went down, and I think Gervais knew that I lost the bet, but instead of me, I paid him – I can't remember what I paid. I paid him like 10 bucks because I was like, 10 bucks was my deal. He's like, no, it was 100, and he paid me $100. So I Venmoed him 10 bucks, and he Venmoed me back 100. He said, keep it, Big Hoss. Donate it towards a good cause.
Wow. Wow. Jake coming through as the good guy.
Good guy. You know, it's not often that Jake's a good guy, but.
I'm glad you threw that jab in there because we love the Jake Gervais body punches.
Yeah. We just released the episode with him. It'll be when people are hearing this, it'll be a week ago, and people are receiving that one pretty well. So a lot of Jake Gervais recently in the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Too much. But that story is incredible. Clearly, the Paulson twins, I mean, just from that story alone, just two of the best. You guys listening can get a feel for who these guys are. Let's take it back to how you guys got to Iowa City in the first place, what high school looked like for you guys. I want to know about it all because there's stories of you guys like alternating who's going to win the wrestling meet, who's going to do this. Talk to us about that dynamic in high school and then up through how you got recruited to Iowa and what was that was like.
So you want to talk about like high school first, or you want to talk about like how we got
talk about recruited? High school first.
And how easy it was to just dominate kids out of the cornfields in Iowa when you guys are ridiculous monsters.
Yeah. But it's, man, it's so weird. And we tell everybody this, like, we didn't know, like, we didn't even have aspirations to play college ball. No, I mean, we didn't have a favorite team. Like, we had a liking, like, I'm a Miami Dolphins fan. And he's a Steelers fan, but we didn't watch him.
We didn't watch.
We just, you know, got their jersey and wore it around. Like I wore Dan Marino jersey around because I thought it was awesome, you know.
Oh yeah.
But we didn't watch. I didn't know who Dan Marino was. Like we didn't know. We didn't watch the Iowa Hawkeyes. We didn't watch, you know, Iowa State. We didn't watch anybody. We didn't watch college football. We were too busy like climbing apple trees outside.
Baylen Hay.
I'm serious. Like it just our Saturdays and Sundays weren't dedicated to football. Like we trained during the week in high school, but we worked on the weekends and we enjoyed being with our friends. And when it was time to compete, like we competed, but ultimately there wasn't even a thought in our mind of playing college football. And anyways, like seventh and eighth grade, we played every sport, basketball, wrestling, baseball, football, track and field. And, you know, we enjoyed it. And
we also did a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, we also did a bunch of other stuff, band, choir, drama, whatever you want. Like, we did it. But it was at a small school like ours, K through 12 school. Like, it's not uncommon for guys to do it because you're doing it all with your friends, you know? It's not, like, looked upon as, like, oh, man, that guy's a nerd. It's like, my friends are in the band. Like, I'm going to play in the band. And we actually had an awesome band teacher. He was a young guy, and he like got us really interested in it. And he was an Iowa grad. He played in the marching band with my sister, and it was like that's what made it enjoyable, you know, and being around your friends and stuff like that. But anyways, like my point is in something we didn't even have any aspirations to like play college ball, and we had a next door neighbor. His name was Dan Kruger, and my dad's name is Dan Kruger, and my
Dan Paulson,
and Dan came over to my dad and said, Dan, like, your boys are 6'4", and they're eighth graders. He said, have you thought about like taking him to a camp, you know, and getting him involved in college ball or anything like that? He's like, no, my dad's a farm boy from Iowa, you know, really small town, like 80 people. And Dan was a All-American D end at Wayne State in Nebraska.
Yep. Our neighbor, Dan.
And he came over and talked to my dad, and dad's like, no, I never really thought about taking him to a camp. So our first camp we went to, we went with our best friend. He's still our best friend of this day, was UNI lineman camp. And it was just like, dad never like had talked to us about, you know, playing college ball. He just said like, you're here to learn the techniques. You're here to, you know, try to get better and work on your footwork and stuff like that. And really it was like, we had no idea like how big. Friend was big too. He's 6'3", like 280. And we were all pretty big guys from really small town. And that first camp was good, but every camp we made it a point to go and like shake the coach's hand and say, thanks for having us, coach, you know, and just
nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Pretty nonchalant. And we just go back, you know, we'd go to Poncheros, get a burrito, get a lemonade and head back to Mobile.
Oh yeah.
And we only went to one camp in eighth grade. And then freshman year, we went to maybe two camps. We went to Northwest Missouri State camp and the UNI camp again with our best friend. And, you know, again, the same thing and not much. And then sophomore year, it was like a little bit going into our sophomore year, we went to Iowa camp.
And Iowa State.
UNI, South Dakota State. I mean, we went to quite a few camps, and it was just like, once again, to try and get better, you know, how could we win a state championship, you know, at Woodbury Central?
Yeah.
Like, that's what we were thinking. That's what we were honestly, that's
all every high school kid's thinking about, man.
Right. And
our dad had us totally like, yeah, we had no idea that my dad was taking us to these camps to put us out there to potentially get recruited and to potentially earn a scholarship and have our schooling paid for. We had no idea of this. We just thought we were learning technique on how to be a lineman, you know? Just absolutely. Dude,
this story's blowing my mind.
This guy, yeah.
Absolutely.
And anyway, so going into sophomore year, this is the same summer. The Iowa camp was the last one we went to. And it was in the middle of July. And right after the camp, we were getting ready to go to Chicago to visit our sister.
Sunday. Yeah, it was Sunday.
It was Sunday, and we were getting ready to go after the camp. We were going to go visit our sister. And we talked to Coach Ferentz after the camp and just said, you know, once again, like, thanks for having us, Coach. Like, this was a lot of fun. It was a really, really good learning experience for us and whatever. And just got away, and we went on this vacation from hell. Like, everything that went wrong, like,
could go wrong.
It was, our car blew up. We couldn't see Ellis Tower. It was foggy. You know, it made us never want to ever step foot in any suburb of Chicago or Chicago ever again.
It was terrible, and our parents were grouchy, and oh, it was just not a good vacation.
Anyways, the next week we like get back, and we get a phone call from Reese Morgan, and we knew Reese was the line coach at Iowa, and
he'd been recruiting us.
No, he hadn't.
Oh, no, he hadn't even visited.
He hadn't even visited us, but, like, he had maybe reached out, you know, after the camp and said, like, hey, want to talk to you on the phone, you know, here next couple of days. And we're like, yeah, we're just coming back from vacation. Like, we'll set that, you know, we can set that up for sure. So the next Sunday, it was like, give you a call. And Coach Morgan called us, and he said, hey, Levi, this is Coach Morgan from Iowa. He said, Coach Ferentz wants to just say a few words to you right now. And
both of you, put it on speakerphone.
Both of you, you know, put it on speakerphone. And at this point, we're like totally clueless. And Coach Ferentz calls and he says, Landon, Levi, he said, you know, we really like what we see in you two. He said, we like your character, your integrity, and, you know, the way that you guys play. He said, and we'd like to offer you full ride scholarships to the University of Iowa. And
woohoo!
Yeah, like woohoo!
Hey, those are some words we've never heard. So
yeah, I ain't heard that.
Thank you for enlightening us on what this actually feels like.
I feel like I just got a scholarship.
Same. This feels like I'm in high school again.
So, but still, like, we didn't understand what it meant, because being from a really, really small school like Mobile, like, we had never seen anybody, like, do something like that, like, play football at the next level. Like, we had no idea. We're just like, oh, thanks. Like, what do you say? Oh, thank you. You know? We honestly were so,
thanks, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. We didn't know, like, what it entailed, what a full ride scholarship entailed, like, what getting your college paid for, like, entailed. But anyway, we didn't even know how to commit. Like, we didn't understand it. Like, we'd see people on Twitter say, yep, I'm officially committed to the University of Iowa and stuff like that, you know, and, oh, I just picked up my next offer from, you know, Auburn or wherever, Illinois. And we were just like, we didn't know, like, what to do, if we should talk to the coaches. So we didn't commit till the next year, the next summer or fall. And the coaches were, like, visiting our house, like, trying to get us to commit, and we didn't understand what they were doing. Like, why were they coming up to our school, you know?
But it's like, it makes us sound very, like, unintelligent or
No. It's about as funny a story as I've ever heard.
It makes you guys sound like just the hardiest, most good old boys there ever were.
So anyways, our dad, you know, he's kind of like, you guys, I think it'd be a good idea for you to go to college. And he's kind of telling us, like, weigh your options, you know, visit schools. What's your interest? Agriculture or science or math or nursing or medicine or whatever it may be. So we're also taking visits to other schools to see, like, what they have to offer, because, you know, if I'm interested in agriculture and pursuing an agronomy degree to go learn about agriculture and potentially work on our farm someday, you can't really do that at Iowa, right? You know? So long story short, we came to the realization, our wrestling coach came and talked to us, really good guy. And he said, what are you guys waiting for? Like, what are you waiting for? He goes, you realize the opportunity and, like, the money that's at stake to pay for your college and whatnot. And we're like, oh, whatever. So we ended up, and also we'll come back to this situation. We sat down with our wrestling coach and he said, I want you boys to come over to my house. And he said those words, but also we were at his house, like, going into our junior year, he was talking to us about who's gonna cut down to 220 to wrestle.
Oh shit!
Because we were, because
you both can't wrestle heavyweight.
We're 270 right. pounds, you know, at this time, probably 270, 280 going into our junior year, and we're just like,
that's who's a lot
gonna,
of weight.
Who's to gonna cut? You know, so that was a different instance, and we're just like, coach, like, you're kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth. Like, you want us to commit to Iowa and you want us to, one of us to cut down in 220, you know, and we're getting recruited as offensive linemen, you know? So we were just like, we can't do it. Like, we're not going to put our, you know,
strength and
size we've built, you know, in jeopardy. So we told them, we're just going to split time at heavyweight. And sophomore year, Levi,
qualified
and wrestled 220. He cut down and I wrestled heavyweight, and Levi didn't place at state. He was sucking so much weight, he just didn't even wrestle like himself. And I wrestled heavyweight and I got third. And anyways, during this conversation with our coach, we came to the, you know, mutual agreement. Levi's like, yeah, you're on a roll. Like, you wrestled really well at heavyweight this year. Like, when the time comes to it, you're going to wrestle traditional state at heavyweight, and I'm going to wrestle dual team state, you know, that is if we made it. And we did end up making dual team state, you know, as a team all 4 years. And so that kind of helped us out, worked perfectly for us. Like, we were still wrestling at state, but we weren't wrestling as an individual. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that year Levi was 34-0 and I went 33-1 and I lost in the finals. And then the next year we switched and I went 34-0, he went 33-1 and he won it. He won a state title. So I never got to win a title, but, you know, that's kind of our wrestling story and our meeting with our coach, like, when we did end up committing to Iowa, and
the week after that conversation,
yep.
But it's just so crazy. You know, we showed up to Iowa, you know, kind of clueless. Like, you know, in a lot of the team meetings, they bring back, you know, former players that made an impact on the program or were bit, you know, went to the NFL, had successful careers. And, I mean, we didn't know who Dallas Clark was. We didn't know Marshall Yanda, Bob Sanders. Like, we didn't know any of these big names that people were talking about. It was crazy.
Like, because we didn't follow it. We didn't follow college football. Like, you know, the only person I knew and I regretted is Blythe, you know, and that's because heavyweight wrestler. And he arguably the best heavyweight wrestler, you know, to ever come through the state of Iowa. Like, he was part of the reason why we ended up committing.
Really liking Iowa, you know.
Because he came up to me and he said, Landon, hey, I saw your finals match. He said, don't worry, the same thing happened to me. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. You know, I want to be around dudes like that, you know, dudes who, you know, honestly give a shit about you. And that was like a kind of a turning point, you know, in our recruiting process. And honestly, like, Iowa was our only offer. And we were just like stupid not to take it. You know what I mean? And we were like searching around and whatnot. And honestly, we should have been walk-ons, like two fat guys from Northwest Iowa, you know, and one offer. Nobody else is even like looking at us. Yeah, we got mail and stuff and guys came and visited our complex and stuff, but nobody really showed like true like dedication and interest to us other than Iowa. And that was the coolest part. And the ultimate decision was, you know, the coaches were awesome at Iowa and the guys were awesome at Iowa. And that's what we wanted to be around.
That's a recruiting story unlike any other.
Bro, I'm sitting here like, holy shit.
That's a pretty crazy. That's even crazier than No Onions. It's not as funny, but it's crazier.
Yeah, if you guys listen to the Gervais episode, Gervais was on his way to Air Force, and they wouldn't let him in because he's allergic to onions. And so, yeah, that was our response, too. So he ended up at Iowa. But
yeah, I'm telling you, and we didn't know much about football in that aspect. Like, what we learned in high school football was run blocking, you know,
go left or go right.
Pass blocking, don't go downfield because you'll get a penalty. Like, I'm telling you, that is pretty much what we knew.
But you guys way better than everybody.
So, God damn it. I mean, what a story. So you get to Iowa and you're sitting in these team meetings. I mean, because I
you
guess.
You played it off well. We're just learning this now that you guys were just completely in outer space for a couple years.
Talk about the shock of,
you know, small town Iowa. It's a Iowa City, which is by no means a big town, but it's, you know,
and
decent sized town.
And I don't mean to bring up I don't want to bring up like a sore spot, but talk about the shock of strength and conditioning for you guys, because I know that's something that you guys definitely had some struggles with early on.
For sure.
And I can relate because I fucking was in the trash can multiple times in my first couple years. And so talk about Doyle and what it's like now to be a big-time Division I football player and learning that process of becoming one of the guys that you knew nothing about originally.
And I mean, I think we can kind of combine two stories in one. Like, you know, Kevin was asking about, you know, coming from small-town Iowa to 120,000 population town. You know, all the experiences that we had in high school, like we started our own snow removal company when we were 11. And we scooped the neighbor's driveway across the street. And it took us like three times, you know, and my dad scolded us, you know, go scoop their driveway. They want you to scoop their driveway. They're 90 years old. They can't scoop their driveway. Okay, we'll do it. And we like didn't get paid the first three times. Anyways, this old boy, he rolls up the garage and he hands us like $150 for the last three times. And we're just like, whoop. Yep, don't have to ask us again. So that was that was the start of, you know, our business. We're like, why is Dad yelling at us to scoop these guys? We didn't understand. We were so young. And then the next year we had three driveways, and by the end of our senior year we had over 15 driveways that we scooped, and we ended up buying a snowblower and buying a flat screen TV that we still have in our house today, and and people like started to know that
we scoop driveways.
Boys, I fucking love
you guys a lot.
I mean, I think the smiles that you guys have are obviously infectious, and I'll let you get back to your story. The hair story that people know, you know, other things that we're going to get to here. These stories that you're telling us are so absolute Iowa just gold. I don't know what to say, but thank you, because I'm glad we have a platform for you guys to talk about it.
And yeah, I mean, thanks for having us. We've listened to a couple of the podcasts and
good stuff.
You don't have to lie.
You don't have to lie. It's dog shit.
Light on stuff that the average American the Iowa fan, or, you know, people don't hear or see any of the insight that you guys provide on this, you know, and
people don't realize incredible that, you know, there's a personality behind a face mask. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what you guys do, is, you know, bring to light all these personalities and why, you know, all of us are so passionate about Iowa football, you know, and the guys that, you know, we all played with. That's ultimately
100%
the best part about Iowa football, you know. And, you know, once you get into your fourth and fifth year, then you realize that, like, most of the coaches we had are, you know, just the same way, just guys full of character. And, you know, that's what you guys are bringing to light, and it's absolutely really awesome.
But back to our story. So we were scooping. So you guys, yeah, thank you guys.
You're of course.
So back to our story. So that's kind of where we developed our work ethic, was, you know, starting out with the snow removal business, and then people figured out that, okay, these guys are kind of big guys and they're willing to do some hard stuff, because shoveling driveways was not something
at 4:30 in the morning.
Wasn't something everybody wanted to do, but they saw that we were willing to do it. So we started getting phone calls, you know, from hay baling to moving a desk to moving couch to
recliners
to scooping a shit pin out for a goat, and like
just the most random Iowa stuff, like hillbilly deluxe you could ever. And people would call us and they would pay us like really good money for being young guys, and we were just like, we don't want paid this much, like this is way too much. And they're like, if you don't take our money, we're never hiring you again. And I'm just like, okay, like, we'll take your money, but, like, honestly, don't. We were moving recliners up out of people's basements and they would give us $50. I'm like, it took 2 minutes. You know, and so, like, our phones started to explode. Like, we did landscaping jobs and, you know, you name it, people called us. But where we're going with this is we pretty much started our own custom small square baling business. And we baled damn near, you know, most of the bales in Woodbury County.
Square bales.
And we did it every weekend. You know, we'd have practice or whatever all week, and that's what we look forward to on the weekend.
During the growing season.
That's what we look forward to in the summer, was, you know, going baling hay on the weekends. And that's, I mean, yeah. We thoroughly enjoyed it, because like the Iowa program, if you're doing it with guys that you enjoy and guys that you, you know, have fun with, like, it doesn't seem like work, you know? And I know, like, gun to your head squats, like, are absolutely
work.
Gun to your head.
But it's like
5 reps. You better get 5 reps.
It's more enjoyable because there's guys around you, you know, that make it more enjoyable.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
So, like, 100%. Ultimately, like, coming to Iowa and how much of a progression our program is, it wasn't honestly that bad, because we had set up our, you know, our own business and clientele, you know, that we had to do, you know, every week and every day. And coming to Iowa, it's the same thing, you know, it's a business and it's operated like a business. Like, you don't know anything, you come in and by the end, you know more than you could ever imagine.
Exactly.
So going back,
what I'm learning about you guys is that you weren't football players. You were moonshiners. Yeah, Iowa. Yes. Talking about all these dirty jobs you were doing and the side hustles.
Exactly.
Showed up and kicked ass.
Yeah. So to Kevin's question, you know, talking about the change coming from a small school to a big school in terms of, like, diversity aspect in a big city, you know, it was an extreme shock to both me and Landon, because
we went to a K through 12 school. Well, actually preschool through 12 school. So we had preschoolers, our little,
cousins,
5-year-old cousin, and while we were seniors, and you'd walk through the halls and see each other. And we had, 35 to any class had 35 to 45 people per class. And talk about no diversity. We didn't have a single bit of diversity. Blacks, whites, religion, religion aspects of things. Everybody was very, very Northwest Iowa conservative. We might have had a Hispanic family in our school, mm-hmm. and maybe two Hispanic families and one black family. But we'd never been around diversity before. The only thing we knew was white people that are Catholic or Lutheran or Methodist, and that's what we knew. And our little town of 1,200 people, which,
surprise.
Yeah. We get to Iowa City, but being the people that we are, and we have our uncles that were rodeo guys. They're big time interpersonal communicator type of guys. They love talking to people. You could be a bug on the floor and they talk to you the same way we were. So coming to Iowa, it was whoa.
So all different races, religions, and
backgrounds.
For us, we totally embraced it. That was the biggest shock, honestly, was just how diverse Iowa City was. And that was something that, we grew a liking to. And, we have friends, from, all colors, all religions, all aspects of life, come from all over the globe. And, that was what? All these dogs.
How many? We've had more knocks on our door in the past caucus people than I could even begin to tell you.
You guys should run.
Who's that howling right now? Is that Ayla?
Yes, that is
you Ayla. Guys should run Paulson 2020 is what should happen, honestly, at this point.
Not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea at all. So anyways, we got to Iowa, and we just absolutely loved it, I think one of me and Landon's, biggest things was, I had a locker next to Jaleel Johnson. I was 66. Jaleel was 67. And we get to talking one day, and he was asking about – and I was getting to know him, and he was getting to know us. And
he says, Jaleel's the man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just wait till you hear what we're talking Jaleel. About.
Love Jaleel. Unreal. He asked about, so what do you do on the farm? Because we worked for we had a family farm of about 400 acres that our family owned, but our youngest uncle operated that pretty much by himself. And we also worked on a farm with 300 cow-calf pairs, a rancher just southeast of town, and he probably had 2,500 acres of pasture that he raised his cattle on. And he did everything right, and it was a joy to work for.
He's like Kirk Ferentz, before we got to meet Kirk Ferentz.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's how we described him. He's an incredible.
Awesome, awesome, awesome human.
Yeah. So Jaleel. Oh, yeah. So Jaleel's asking what we did on that ranch. And I'm like, yeah, we do anything from, feed cows, raise cows, impregnate cows. And he's like, whoa. what are you talking about? And I said, well, I'm not certified to do it. But, there comes a point in the year where our boss does this thing called artificial insemination or AIing cows. And it's a pretty common practice in the farming industry.
So anyways, the next day, Levi comes around his locker and Jaleel's sitting at his locker watching a video of a farmer AIing cattle.
He looks at Levi and goes, whoa, bro.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you that don't know what AI and cattle entails, it's let's just say you put on a very big glove all the way up to your shoulder, and
you reach in the cow's anus and you push your hand all the way back in there and you reach through the intestines and you grab the cervix, and you put a long straw with semen in it in the vagina and you go all the way into the cervix and it increases your odds of having a calf by 85-90%.
Yeah.
It's way higher than just a bull and a heifer breeding.
You're learning a lot today, guys. So
I knew all this because of Colton. All
yeah. Yeah, right. But yeah, that was the biggest kick,
And he loved it. He's like, this is so cool. He's like, I did not know that they did this to animals, you know, and it's not just cows that they do it to. And, but it's just to Kevin's question, you know, it's just a crash, you know, and even in our locker room, it's just a giant melting pot for all sorts of different cultures, you know.
It's really, really,
oh, yeah. 100%.
Before Jaleel got to Iowa, I mean, I would bet that, you know, because he was from Detroit.
And, yep.
Chicago.
He's from
Bronx. New York.
He's from a few Brooklyn. Places,
Bronx.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bronx.
Yeah. You know, I bet he never even seen a cow. And then you get, like, our team, you know, and how diverse our team is. You know, it was, man, it was an incredible experience. And then living in a big city, it was different for a while. The thing that was probably the most different living in the city, being in the Peterson, the new dorm, we didn't have the pleasure of living in Hillcrest like you guys did. But
Hillcrest was a joy, but I think Peterson was a little bit of a nicer setup.
Did you guys piss in the sinks in Peterson?
No, we had there were individual bathrooms.
Unfortunate for you.
Yep. What? Oh, this is bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit.
But anyway, the biggest shock for us was, like, we live right by the hospital, you know, and the sirens that went through the hospital every day, like,
and not being able to see the stars, you know, in the sky.
Yeah,
because the city lights just don't illuminate stars. That was like the biggest shock.
Yeah, but like I remember back in high school when we heard a siren, you're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Who had a heart attack? Like, because you know everybody, you know. Whereas you're in a city like Iowa City, you're just like, wait, who? What's going on? You know, and our first instinct is like, what's going on? What's going on? And, you know, you just got to get used to the norm sound, of a city.
Sound, yeah, it's wild.
That is hilarious, man.
Absolutely crazy.
Bro, you
can't. Okay, and we'll go back to Kluver's question, too. You asked, like, you know, how much of a culture shock was it for us because of, you know, so he talked going into Coach Doyle's program, you know, and us being huge guys with no gas.
Yep.
You know, maybe a lack of ability to move or push weight around, you know, because we didn't really have many, we didn't have much guidance, you know, coming up. So we looked at Muscle and Fitness and Brian Shaw, and dad like ordered Muscle and Fitness, and he was like starting to lift weights too. And that was probably our biggest downfall, was that we put more of an emphasis on lifting weights than we did on running, footwork.
Being
able to move side to side, you know, because we just thought, oh, if you want to be a college football player, you just got to be huge, you know.
That was what my idea was, too, strong before fast.
Dude, I did like Steve Cook's big man on campus 12-week program and like Mike O'Hearn bodybuilding 8-week power building program. Like, I didn't do shit for running in high school. So I'm in the same boat as the Paulson twins coming into Iowa City.
Exactly. So we were definitely overweight when we got here. Landon was probably at 323, and I was probably a little bit lighter at 310, 312-ish. You know, but we go through our first workout, or, I mean, you learn the warm-up when you first get there.
And
you
think that's the workout, and I was like
– And then you go, you know, and we're dripping sweat and, you know, dehydrated. So we get in there to the weight room, and we weigh in for the first time, and that weight that we weighed in at, oh, that's your immediate optimum body weight, your goal weight that you have to weigh in at. Well, we're dehydrated and stuff, so we come back the next day, you know, and we're like 6, 7, 8 over. That much weight in the, you know, we lost that much water weight when they were teaching us the warm-up. I look at my goal sheet, and, you know, Coach Doyle is so intimidating, you know, your freshman year, and I look at my goal sheet, and it says 314. Weigh 323. I'm like, I ain't gonna make that. It was just like, I immediately, like, where's the nearest sauna? Like, is there a wrestling room around here I can go get and lose weight or something? And I'm not drinking water. Like, it was,
because
it's not like a person that's never, you know, weighed in before and had to maintain a body weight. Like, we wrestled and we were teetering around the 285 mark, so we knew how to, like, the concept of losing weight, you know. And
hell yeah.
You eat a granola bar before you drink a 16-ounce bottle of water, you know, that weighs an entire pound. So, oh, it was crazy, you know. But, you know, coming into Coach Doyle's program, it was awesome because of the fact that, we know, he rewards consistency, you know, and just coming back, nose to the grindstone, never giving up, and, like, good work ethics. That's what Coach Doyle's program reward. And see,
that's the exact way that I would describe you guys. You are two of the grittiest motherfuckers, just how Brian Ferentz would always describe you guys. Brian was a little less cordial about it, and he's like, dude, these guys have two left feet, and they make everyone they make every one of Doyle's conditioning times. You know why? Because they're some of the grittiest motherfuckers we got, and like, that's just the way that I would describe you guys. It's just full of grit. I still
can't run 60 to this day. What? I still can't run a 60 to this day.
Brother. Oh, boys.
The Cut 85s were not my favorite, but yikes.
Yeah, so it was, you know, I think that, you know, Iowa does a very good job of recruiting guys who, you know, will adapt and will, like, take hold of that, the grit of the program, you know, and that's what, I mean, we gravitated towards it, like, I loved coming in and trying to, like, beat my max, you know, my first 3 years. And then it's like, oh, my body's falling apart. Like, maybe not what I'm doing, you know.
Seven surgeries later, it's like, oh.
Maybe not beating the max today. Maybe just trying to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not compensating for it by getting in the hot tub for 30 minutes and just being able to, you know, feel your joints. But Coach Doyle's program, unbelievable. Unbelievable man, you know, and a lot of people don't realize, like, in my opinion, and I think in Landon's opinion as well, Coach Doyle is the best at strength conditioning in the entire nation.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I think, you know, in terms of what goes on in his mind, how he runs his program, and probably how much he gets paid. I mean, he's the head of, you know, the certification program, as Kevin probably knows. You know, he's an incredible dude.
Tyler,
you walk into his office, and it's just it's books, you know, and he's the only strength coach, head strength coach in the nation at the Division I level that only has his bachelor's degree.
You know, doesn't have a doctorate.
Doesn't have a doctorate or a master's, or, you know, it's just phenomenal what he's able to do. And, you know, going through his program was good for me and Landon, you know, because it took our concept of, you know, just being big to being able to move, you know, and move optimally. And it was incredible, man. It was incredible. Even if he broke you a few times, you know, doing sideline to hash prowlers, that's probably the one time in my life that I thought, I don't think I'll be able to make it through the Iowa football program.
Wait, when were you guys doing sideline to hash prowlers?
That was our freshman year. Their
very first year, yep.
That was when on Fridays,
it was six sets. You guys would do it on Fridays, and it was like you guys started with like four sets. I remember it. You guys were on the like the east sideline of. I remember that for sure.
Was this GPP or what was this?
Huh? This was so. Kevin, do you remember on Fridays? You know.
Oh, after we got done practicing, the freshmen had to do extra stuff. That I do remember that now. Yeah,
that's when we did sideline to hash prowlers. Oh my gosh! And the thing about my experience is that I went to the Shrine Bowl coming in. Well, we both went to the Shrine Bowl, but I dislocated my elbow and just tore everything in my elbow.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I was in a brace for like 2 months, you know, and letting the joints or the ligaments and tendons heal. And my first workout back is the second time we pushed the prowlers with heavier weight, more reps. And I literally thought I was not going to be able to go through the Iowa football program. I deep down in my heart, I'm like, I cannot do this. Because
that was probably the only time that I questioned it.
Doyle brought us up after that workout, and he stood there and he talked for like 5 minutes.
And I was like shaking, my legs are shaking.
Dude, I went through the same thing, man.
I bent down to pick up my knee braces, and I damn near collapsed like to the ground. And I'm like shaking there. Like Coach Doyle's like, but keep your hands off of everybody. Get your eyes up. Don't stop breathing.
Oh, the old coach, I'm just tying my shoe. I'm just fixing my socks.
Boys,
I'm bending over.
The first time that I pushed a prowler, we did six sets. They were 15 yards long, so it wasn't shit. It was six sets. It was just prowlers alone, nothing combined. I made it through four prowlers, puked in the can for the last two reps, and they called it up. And when I went to run over to the group, you know, when a horse gets like real prancy and like trots on his toes, I went to run and my legs didn't work. And so I had to like trot over, like, because I couldn't stay on one leg too long or I was going to cramp up. And I don't remember a word that was said over the next 30 minutes from either Coach Doyle, any of my teammates, or anyone else in the whole building because I was that fucked up.
Yeah, there was probably – I'm pretty sure there were like 14 out of like 28 guys who were puking after that. And I
sounds like a good day.
On the locker room floor, and I was just miserable.
I remember.
Yep.
I remember.
Yep. That prowler flu was something different, dude. And like everybody comes on here and we've told our stories of like how many times we thought about like, dude, this shit isn't for me. Like this shit sucks. I said many times I wanted to quit. So y'all are not alone there.
Absolutely.
So, absolutely. I mean, shit, we just spent all that time on you guys coming into the program. Once you guys started to figure it out, because there's that kind of that point where you realize I am going to be able to do it. Like, I got this. I figured out, you know, my brother.
Levi played early as hell.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, you got early playing time. You know, you get over that and you start to become an older guy and you're teaching younger guys. Talk about the rest of your program up through senior day where you guys run out together, which just warms the shit out of my heart. And what the program and Coach Ferentz and just the entirety of Iowa football kind of molded you guys into up until this point. And then after that, we'll talk what the Paulsons are in for next.
Throwing some highlights in there from your time, you know, some of your favorite memories.
Absolutely. So first thing I'm going to say is our senior day, when we walked out, you know, I knew it was going to be a tough day. And I listened to your guys' – well, just on the way home, we came back from Mobile today to Iowa City, and I listened to the Tristan Wirfs podcast, and he said, you know, I didn't know it, you know, throughout the season if I was going to, you know, come back, or, you know, maybe I didn't try to think about it. But our senior day, I knew that he wasn't coming back because we ran out to our parents together, you know, and it was a super rewarding experience, you know, and I saw my dad about break down in tears. I've never seen my dad cry. But he didn't end up crying, but I walk off the sideline, and I'm telling you, Tristan Wirfs, you know, he wore the black eye black. Black eye black was all over his chin, all over his – and I'm like, what's going on? He's like, I'm going to miss you guys, and blah, blah, blah. When in reality, you know, I think it was
– he's not going to have a
– he's not going to be able to experience it. You know, he's going to experience a totally different, you know, walking across the stage in a different way. And – So I'm like, you got to get together. You got to play a game, man. And he was involved the whole time through the national anthem. You know, now Kinnick's
captains,
through the captains, and he's bawling.
Boy, this is the offensive lineman of the year.
Emotional right now, sitting through that interview with Tristan, listening to him talk about it, and now hearing you guys see the emotion, I might have to step out for a second. This is messing me up. This podcast is some shit.
I mean, the senior day deal was hard, and it was, like, hard just to think about, you know, this is my last time coming to Kinnick Stadium. This is my last time touching the Niall Kinnick helmet. This is my last time walking down these stairs. This is my last time walking out. You know, that's what's going
hard. It starts to get into the little things like, oh, this is the last time I'll walk through this door.
Oh, this is the last time I have burgers and ice cream, you know?
Oh,
oh man.
Anyways, dude, that last burger at that place, man, I always, you know, it's not the best burger ever, but what it means.
Oh, absolutely. And
I think that last snack, me, Josie, Bo, and Ben, we were down there for like a solid like hour and a half at snack. We were like the last ones there. It's like, man,
gotta enjoy it.
This is it. Yeah.
So back to, you know, our career in football, you know, so I didn't end up going – well, I was at camp my freshman year, but I didn't practice because I had the messed up elbow, you know, which was tough. So we go through that, you know, and I go through spring ball, and, you know, it's a learning curve steeper than, you know, Mount Everest, you know, for me and Landon. We didn't know crap about football, and we're digging into a playbook that's 3 inches thick and looks like a complete foreign language to us.
You didn't even know the words.
Oh. Absolutely not. We didn't know. Yeah, it was crazy. We barely even knew, like, the concept of the two-hole, three-hole on the left side kind of deal, you know. And so we go through that first spring ball after our redshirt year, and we go through spring ball, and it goes good. You know, we're kind of learning, grasping some of the concepts. And we go through fall camp, our second year. So our first year we can play as redshirt freshmen. And things are going good. You know, I think we're taking mostly reps with, you know, that third group, maybe fourth group sometimes, you know. But, you know, as after camp broke and maybe we had a bye week or something just started to click for me, you know, in terms of blocks. Well, it was the first bye week, so we were doing blocks and nine on during that bye week. Whenever it was, I could be completely wrong. It might have been at the end of camp, whatever it may be. But towards the end of fall camp or our bye week, whenever it was, you know, I remember going through blocks and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I just figured out like everything in my mind that Brian Ferentz was teaching me, you know, to the most minute of minuscule of details was like coming to me in like crystal clear vision, you know, and I was blocking people like crazy. You know, I remember it vividly, you know. I remember doing like six reps of blocks in a row, you know. I blocked a defensive lineman, you know, three times and just blew him off the ball 5 to 10 yards at any given time, you know. So then they moved me up. They're like, oh, somebody get in here. I don't know who it was. It might have been Jaleel or Faith. I can't remember. But they put me up against him. You know, I helped him, drove him off the ball, not 5 yards, but like 3-4 yards. And they're like, okay. So I immediately started taking reps with the twos, and it was you know, you take that step and it's like, oh my gosh, this game's a lot faster than what the threes have been, you know. But I catch on, and comes to the Michigan week, you know, and I kind of get the feeling that I'm a sixth man on the line. You know, five guys play at any given time. I'm kind of getting the feeling like Brian's saying, hey, if something goes wrong during the game, somebody blows out an ankle, he says, you're the next guy in. And well, I'm like,
this asshole was a self-fulfilling premonition.
Oh, absolutely. And so anyways, we get to Michigan week, you know, and everything's going good and it's a big game. And I think, I mean, what, they were ready.
Drake broke his ankle.
Oh yeah.
No. Ike sprained his ankle against Michigan.
He was saying that Brian Ferentz called it.
Yeah. Brian Ferentz called it. But so and it's the biggest game of the season.
Yeah.
The biggest game of season against a defense
in the fourth quarter.
In the fourth quarter with a defense that's rated, I don't even know what in the nation.
Number one in the country. First, yeah.
Number one in the country. And they're putting Mobile, Iowa's Levi Paulson out there because Ike blows out his ankle.
And
kind of look at, I looked at Brian and he just had a blank look on his face. He's like, he said, you're up. I'm like,
and
holy. Levi,
the guy that was lining up at fullback had some real anxiety at that point.
Oh my gosh. And I mean, I remember running an inside zone play. So I went into guard, slid Sean Welsh out to right tackle.
Yep.
Okay. So we ran an inside zone play and, you know, I took one step, got vertical on the guy that I was supposed to reach, and he goes right past me. And I just look back and I see Akram's life like flat before him. He like jukes him out, makes like 3 or 4 yards or whatnot. And Brian calls a timeout because he's like getting nervous or whatever. And this isn't exactly how it went down, but he calls a timeout, I remember. And he's like, all right, Levi, he said, you're going to go to right tackle. And Sean's going to go to guard. He said, we're going to run a screenplay. He said, we're going to run a screenplay. And I'm like, okay. Okay. And it made sense because Sean was elite at what he did. And I was just kind of scratching the surface of like my ability. And on that play, the only thing that the right tackle has to do is pretty much just get bull rushed into the quarterback. So the defensive end doesn't have a chance to tackle the run. That kind of squeezes out, you know? So I get bull rushed by this by a first round, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, we catch it, we gain some yards, sets up perfect field position, and oh, that was an unbelievable experience. So Ike was out the next week, and we go on to win, you know, and I come off the field after everybody stormed the field, and Brian is hugging KF in like the tunnel that we come out of, and he looks at me and he's just bawling. This is Brian. talking. He's like, Paulson, he's like, I'm telling you, you didn't do shit. You didn't block shit. He said, bro, we got it done. you, blah, 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 blah. And I mean, it was just, it was It was crazy, you know. My stomach was turning.
Oh my god, Brian is one of the most brash, fucking direct. Tell it how it is, guys.
And that's why we loved Iowa, is because they said, I mean, you guys are not very athletic. He said, but we can make you into an athlete, and we're like, okay, whatever. So, anyways, and I'm starting to play, like, build up confidence after this during practice the following week. I think we played Illinois the following week.
Yep,
and. All respect to Illinois. They weren't very good that year, but still, I was practicing at a really high level against Jaleel, against Faith Ekakity, you know, and I was doing well, not to seem arrogant or whatever, or naive, but I was practicing good. And I go play at Illinois. I start the game at right guard. Sean's at right tackle because Ike was out, and I play the cleanest game of my career. I mean, I played a really good game against Illinois, and
you were throwing some elite cuts.
Oh, elite cuts.
Absolutely. Elite cuts.
You remember that.
Oh, come on, dog. Because those linebackers love to dive on the ground, but you were throwing some elite cuts.
Absolutely. You know, so I'm playing clean football, and I'm doing the details right. I'm able to move really well because I've always been able to move a little bit better than Landon. So I play that game. Ike comes back the following week, and, you know, I kind of ride the rest of the season out as that sixth man, you know, but I was playing some unbelievable football and things were looking good. So my first spring, second spring ball then, I don't know. It's all running.
Spring ball, yeah.
Next spring ball, I end up having a meniscus surgery on my knee, and I heal well from it, you know, come back in the fall. I was playing some really good football at that time, probably my best football, you know, and then it just seemed like I racked up the surgeries, you know, my joints started failing me, you know, but I was still, you know, smart, football smart. So I was always practicing with the twos. And then, you know, if somebody got hurt during practice, I'd practice with the ones, and it kind of always seemed like I was that sixth man in, you know, maybe flirting with being a starter, you know. And then I had that knee surgery. End up having another knee surgery, have a toe surgery, herniated disc in my back, and the next time I play is in the Pinstripe Bowl. I start the Pinstripe Bowl because of a team violation of rules or whatever, and play pretty good in the Pinstripe Bowl besides giving up two back-to-back sacks on that ice rink.
Yeah, you know? Seriously. I mean, everything that happened in that game can be thrown out immediately.
Yeah, absolutely.
And no recollection of it.
Kevin doesn't know what happened.
So you guys played a great game. I don't.
Absolutely. Sliding around probably didn't help your knee at all. Yeah, it didn't help the knee. But so we come back from that break after the Pinstripe Bowl, and I'm just like, we're doing single leg squats, and I'm like, man, something ain't right. Like, my knee swelled up, and something just wasn't right after going through that season. So I'm like, I talked to the orthopedic surgeon. And I said, yeah, Dr. Wolf, like, I need to get my knee checked out again because I can't function like I used to. I can't, like, push off my right foot. So I go in, have another MRI. He's like, yeah, I can't see anything. He said, but we'll look at you. So I go in, have surgery, and they take out my meniscus. So now it's just bone on bone, lateral meniscus. As offensive linemen, I mean, you get in kind of like a weight on your insteps, like, feet outside of your shoulders position, that puts a lot of stress on that lateral meniscus, you know. And man, after that surgery, I had a microfracture too, and it just wasn't the same. You know, I wasn't able to compete in the weight room like I usually was, and had a herniated disc in my back, epidural on that, and then I ended up doing that again, you know. So I kind of ended up riding like the second string position all the way out because, you know, Werfs comes in and they were thinking I was going to play tackle. Werfs comes in and, you know, he's just an unbelievable specimen of a dude, you know, and
the biggest freak of all time.
Oh, absolutely. And in Division I athletics, if you're not producing the way like they've seen you produce, it's like, okay, something's wrong, you know, and there's other guys coming in. Like, I mean, our fourth year Shooter comes in, you know, and he's this little, I'm being all respect to Shooter. He is my best. He's one of our great friends, great, great friends, you know, and we give him crap all the time because he's growing out his hair, you know, but he came in, you know, he just kind of looked like a little pudgy. Like, he couldn't even make it through the long warm-up that we used
he's
to
a
do.
Gremlin, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and he didn't go through the summer program. He comes in, you know, has a little bit of a rough start, you know, but
he comes in, he just starts playing unbelievable football, you know, and
it's like this,
he's got fresh joints. This guy
could block people.
He's like, this guy can block people, you know, he's got fresh joints and he can squat 650 pounds, me later can even squat 450, you know, and and you know, people just started surpassing me because of my injuries, you know, kind of took a toll on me.
Yeah,
and as bad as it sounds, you know, I was still competitive as shit, you know, and I went into every practice, you know, doing whatever I had to do to practice that day because, I mean, you live the – if you're not practicing, you're not going to play, you know. So I was toughing it out through those injuries, you know, because I really wanted to play and I wanted to help the team in whatever way possible, you know. So that was my career and it was
senior year.
Senior year, yeah. After I had that last knee surgery, I started, what, the first four games?
Mm-hmm.
Four games.
That was when we had all the wrestlers.
Wrestlers going, yeah.
Yep.
And I ended up herniated a disc in the
– Rutgers?
No, it was the blue team.
Middle Tennessee State,
yeah. First play of the game, I herniated a disc in my back.
Who did it, Brady Ross?
Brady Ross did it, yeah.
Of course he did.
But I go through and I play that game, you know, but it really slowed me down a lot. Slowed me down in practice. The coaches could see I wasn't practicing well, you know, and they throw Shooter in there and Shooter's, you know, healthy. He's doing really good. And, you know, he became the starter, kind of pushed me out, which I was all for, you know, whatever's going to help the team. And if I'm slowing the team down, you need to put the next guy in there, you know, because whatever you can do to.
We all make are there because we want to win.
You yeah, know? You're all there because you want to win. You know, and as tough as it is to swallow the fact that, God dang it, I'm not good enough anymore, and this kid just surpassed me, you know. It was what was best for Hawkeye football. And then you got Landon's side of the story, and if we got time, he'll try and tell you that. Holy crap.
Boys, we got nothing but time.
Go for it. I ain't cutting this off for shit.
My story's like, yeah, man, it's so weird. So I played the Shrine Bowl, you know, the summer coming into Iowa, and Levi got hurt and, you know, pretty much lost his elbow. Like, I was standing right next to him when he dislocated it, you know, in that Shrine Bowl practice. And so Levi wasn't even at the Shrine Bowl and, you know, had a lot of fun there. And I was like, I got like MVP of the Shrine Bowl or whatever. And I'm like, well, that's pretty cool, you know, like whatever. And my freshman year, I'm gonna try to condense it and tell you the quick version. My freshman year, you know, kind of got initiated with, you know, blocks and nine on, and I remember going against Jake Hewlett, you know, and I blocked him well, but I didn't move near as well as Levi, and I had to really work to, you know, make my times that first year. And it took a lot of persistence, you know, to really push through, and that first year was very, very tough on me. And you know, redshirt year, and then the next year was my freshman year, or the next year I talked at the Rose Bowl. I talked to Doug West, and I said, Doug, my knee isn't right. Like, something in my knee is clicking, it's catching, and it's not right. He's like, oh, it's just your IT band. You know, go ahead and roll your IT band out. And I'm just like, it is not my
IT. Probably not.
It is not my IT band. So I went to Russ and I'm like, Russ, I need to get my knee checked out. Like, something isn't right. It hasn't been right for a long time. And right before spring ball, I had meniscus surgery and a microfracture. That might have been my second year. I can't remember.
Yep, second year.
Second year I had that. And, you know, it took a big chunk out of, you know, you have a decently major surgery and it takes a lot of time to, you know, get back, and you're trying as hard as you can to get back. And
yeah, especially during spring ball is one of the most important times to be right out there.
I'm sitting there and I'm like, I haven't even scratched the two deep, like not even close, not even a thought. And I'm like thinking to myself, I'm 2.5 years in, like I'm halfway done. And I haven't done anything. You know, and it was so frustrating me because, like, you know, our mindsets is just like, I'm going to do whatever I can to succeed and be the best that I can be, you know, and help the team in whatever way possible. So, you know, I was kind of, you know, Coach Ferentz always says, you know, you just got to find your role, you know, and like Abdul Hodge came back and he said the same thing, find your role. So my role is different. Like, I wasn't playing, but I was like, I would go against Budgeta every day, and the, you know, Budgeta would come up to me, you know, after practice towards the end of the year. He like,
you know, the look you give me every day is the best look that I go against all the time. You know, and that was really meaningful to me to like have somebody like acknowledge that I was trying, you know,
and that was on scout team.
That was on scout team. Yeah. Yeah. And I embraced it. I loved it, you know, and a bunch of the guys on the scout team, like a bunch of guys who left on the offensive line scout team, they would always like want breaks, like want to come out. And I'm like, okay, like I'll take every rep. I don't care. So I like took every single rep, you know, in the scout team. And even when I would try to come out and get a breather, Coach Reed or, you know, Coach Parker screaming down my neck or, you know, spitting in my face, like, I'm like, I want to be in there. I want to be in there so bad. And I, whenever I would take a break, Bajeda would scream at me and say, Paulson, get back in here. What are you doing? You know, and he gets so mad at me. And so that was, you know, that was really gratifying for me. And, but, you know, I'm like towards the end of my third year and I haven't even played, you know, and all I wanted to do was get in the two deep, you know, and all I wanted to do was show that, you know, I could do something. And it was really tough. And all I wanted to do was I was getting stronger and I was getting bigger and I was trying to get faster. I might not have gotten faster, but I was trying. And, you know, Coach Doyle would hammer me every day, Paulson, knee up, toe up, you know, pick your knees up. And Worf's tells me, you know, just makes me feel really good when he first got here. Yeah, that's one of the first things I noticed about you. You know, you've run really weird. I'm like, thanks, dude. And but it's getting towards the end of my third year, and Brian Ferentz called Levi. He knew that Levi was kind of going through a rough time, and Levi was traveling with the team, and I was like with the threes or whatever, and Brian told Levi to tell me. He said, because you guys know how me and Levi, like, we're on the sideline, we just screamed and yep. Crazy.
Stupid. Big high energy guys. Yeah, absolutely.
High energy guys, you know, just total fake Gervais juice. You know, that's
100% fake juice.
We're trying to get the crowd into it, you know, and we're also like picking people up, like came maybe a three and out or something. You know, we're picking those guys up as they came off the field.
And Brian called Levi, and what did he say?
I had that. Was that?
I don't know. It was one of them. Of the seven.
Yeah. I had a back injury, and he calls me. He says, hey, Levi, he says, you know, you're a guy that hasn't played much since, you know, that 2017 season. He says, but just get ready, you know, and also tell your brother that leadership that you guys show on the sideline, he says, that's going to pay off.
It
doesn't go unnoticed. He's like, we're not traveling without you boys for the rest of your time here. Well, so that because was, Landon wasn't traveling.
I didn't travel. So that was like, that was pretty meaningful to me, you know. And then Brian sent me a text. He said, we need you on these trips. And I was like, that's pretty cool. So
hell yeah.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, it makes a difference, dude.
Oh, my
God. Makes a difference.
The last.
Having guys that don't let guys get down on themselves, having guys reassuring guys on the sidelines, it's huge.
Absolutely. Right. And so it was the last game of 2018.
Yeah, it was the Nebraska game and the Pinstripe Bowl.
Yeah, it was the last game I traveled to, and we went to Lincoln that year, and man, it was
dog piss out of him.
We beat the crap out of him, and I just remember I was standing on the sidelines with Boone, and Boone was hurt too, you know, and
Boone Myers.
Boone had the worst. He got the worst shaft of all time. Dude.
He did, and it's tough, but it's like, you know, that's what, you know, the program is all about. You just, you know, nutting up and
resilience
and dealing with the cards you're dealt, you know.
For sure.
You know, life
gives you, life's about too. That's why we're
life gives you the sourest lemon possible, you know, and you try to turn it into something like lemonade, you know. It's like that's what it's all about. And
I
and
think guys, that's why the Hawks are so successful everywhere else outside of the building. Is because right. It's like, oh shit, we got lemons again. Let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the coolest part about it. And so I traveled to that game, and I was like, I was ecstatic, you know. And I was sitting in the
Landon's first time eating a burger,
you know. Like it was like first.
Their burgers weren't too good at that hotel. We stayed there twice. I wasn't a huge fan.
It was good. But I was so jacked that I was traveling, and oh man, it was just like, I'm like, that feels good. 'Cause I had gone almost, you know, into my fourth year and I hadn't been in the two deep.
No, that was into your third year.
Yeah. But almost into my fourth.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh, into my fourth, not
into.
In. Yeah. Into your fourth year. And so fourth year comes around and I was in the two deep and I played, you know, I actually played like a little bit of significant football at guard and which was a lot of fun and more gratifying than, you know, going in when we're beating Iowa State by 50, you know.
Hey, yes, sir.
Hey, it's still pretty fucking gratifying though.
Yeah, it's still gratifying. But
going through a coaching change that year.
Going through a coaching change, you know, which was tough. Any coaching change is tough.
Absolutely.
Going from a guy like Brian, you know, that maybe watches four plays.
It's hard. Brian is a straightforward dude. He's going to tell you the honest to God truth about who you are as a person, you know, and his coaching philosophy was totally different than Coach Polisek.
And then
Coach Polisek is a totally different personality as well, you know. He's screaming all the time, you know, really high, really energy. High energy all the time, you know. And so it was difficult for us because any coaching change was difficult.
Sure. But my fourth year,
but it turned out to be good. Coach Polisek's an unbelievable dude.
Yeah.
He is.
100%.
He is.
And so my fourth year, I didn't start, and I really like my dad proud, and I knew all my family was proud of me, but I was just like, if I go through 5 years and I don't play any like significant football, I would have been really, 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 really disappointed, you know, and I was really down on myself, but I'm like, you know, what do you go back to, you know, just keep swinging. And that's what it's all about, is just keep doing it. And I remember, you know, talking to Yanda my first year and he just like, Paulson, if I have any advice for you, he said, just keep doing it.
Run the race,
you know, run the race and run it till the end. And that was my mindset, you know. And I got on field goal that year, and oh man, it was sweet. And that's, you know, like
field goal was sweet.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, that's like one of the hard things about being an offensive lineman is like there's five spots, you know, as a linebacker, DB, wide receiver, running back, fullback, whatever. You can go play some special teams. You know, lineman, you got field goal and you got the five spots in the offensive line. So
yep, exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure. And I mean, it was pretty cool actually, like that 18 season, like we ran so many fakes.
Oh yeah.
that was
people like, loved it.
Oh, it was so silly. It was like they knew it was coming, but they just couldn't, you know, deal with it.
Yeah.
It was fun to be like a part of like those historical turning points in some games, which is like the Penn State game when Sam caught that touchdown,
or absolutely,
or like when Hockenson scored against Minnesota, like
Michigan field goal in 2017 to win it.
Yeah, it was just those special teams moments are, and that's why Coach Ferentz puts such an emphasis on them, because it's like it's a part of the game that a lot of people take for granted, but like. Some legends are born in the special teams, you know?
And some legends trip on the 4-yard line and come up just a ton.
2 yards.
I'll put an asterisk by that and say no legends actually ever trip. So
yeah, no
legends have a beer named after them.
I do have a beer named after me, which
which you don't deserve because you don't drink.
Correct.
But so that fourth year I was on special teams primarily, and then going into my fifth year, it was not a really good situation for me. Bowl prep went well, and then we get into the fall and we get voted as Hawkeye championship captains, and I had to take a biomechanics class on Tuesdays and Thursdays right during practice.
Damn.
Biomechanics. We know about biomechanics.
And I had to take that class.
I didn't go very often.
And we practiced Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday for bowl prep or for spring ball. And I literally like couldn't make it to 9 of the 15 practices. Yeah. So I'm just like, what do I do? Like, I want to play. I want to play. Like, I want to, like, I want to get in there. Like, I'm so close. Like, I can taste it. And I was, it was, I mean, it's hard, you know, and everybody goes through different stuff in the program. And it's just like, I have to do it. Like, if I want to get a degree, like, I have to take this class because I am not taking it in the fall during, you know, the
those practices. Yeah. Yeah.
So I did it. And, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I would get out of class at like 9:15 and I would sprint to practice and I'd get my pads on and I would practice for like the last two, maybe team periods during practice. It was like, there's only like 10 minutes left of practice. Weissman would warm me up as fast as I could. And I'm like, yep, I'm good to go. You know, I'm trying to get in there and get in and play at left guard, you know, and I did. And, you know, right at like practice 7 or 8, you know, they knew I was coming from practice and Coach Ferentz like looks at me and he's like, who in the hell is this guy? And I'm just like, what do you mean? He said, like, why are you playing with so much confidence? Like, why are you're playing like I've never seen you play before. I was like, I don't know. I just want to do what's best for the team, coach. You know, and I didn't know what to say, but honestly, I was just like, I was trying to make an impact and I had to go to school. And so I went practicing for 10 minutes a day and I felt bad for my teammates and I'm a Hawkeye championship captain. I'm like, I'm not at practice and these guys are going through the gauntlet, you know, of spring ball and I'm not. And I felt so bad, but I was just trying to do whatever I could. So, you know, I made the most out of that spring ball of what I could. And I played a lot at left guard and, you know, came to season time and I started, you know, 11 out of the 12 games or however many games we played. And yeah. I mean, it was very rewarding, but the most rewarding part about it is like, you know, I'll never forget, you know, how many times that I had to fail, you know, in order to, you know,
come out on top
and play, you know, for the Hawkeyes. Like, oh, yeah. Everybody's path is so different, you know, through the program and I mean, there's so many stories that are like even just will blow your mind and
yeah, the general public never
even hears about it. You know, it's just, you know, all the reporters and stuff are talking trash and we're just like, keep grinding, man.
Dude, grinding. I don't know about you two. We played with these guys for 3 years and I didn't know 90% of the shit.
I agree. Yeah,
and
we spend
every day with them. And granted, you spend a lot more time with your position group and the guys that you specifically live with. But what you just said, how, you know, every guy has his story. I think we're realizing why we have this podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm emotional as shit right now listening to you guys tell, like, the fact that you get to your senior year and you get to start the whole season after all of that shit, dude. I think I speak for all of Hawkeye Nation and everybody listening to this podcast when I say, like, you make me proud to be your teammate, your former teammate. And, like,
we could say
that shit is wild, dude.
Absolutely.
You are what you both are what being a Hawkeye is all about.
I agree.
I appreciate it
for sure.
Oh, for anybody that's wondering, we are not going to go to the NFL draft.
So this is where we were going to end it and where I want to conclude with. So you guys obviously finish your senior year, fucking awesome way to finish with a win against USC and maybe you can say a few words about that, but then talk about what's next for the Paulsons and where life takes you now.
I don't know. I think the San Diego was, man, we had a fun time. And the coolest part about the San Diego is just like, you know, you're in your fifth year and fourth and fifth year. And you, like, I feel like our senior year went by pretty slow and it went by slow because we were just able to enjoy everything, you know, instead of being so tense and so worried about missing a workout, you know, and stuff like that. You just are able to enjoy. You're able to enjoy the relationships that you have created, you know, over the past 5 years. Just for being small town Iowa, you know, guys, it's, you know, it's an opportunity that most kids in the nation can only dream about. And just seeing like how far we came as a, you know, individual team, you know, and culture from January to the end of the bowl game, like it speaks for itself, man. Like that game was unbelievable. And that's a testament to our teams and and guys just stepping out of their comfort zone for the betterment of the team.
And like Tyler, you said, you talked to Tristan, you said like the 10 wins puts you in an elite company, you know, with some elite teams under the Coach Ferentz era. And that's the thing is like, could you feel if it was special or not? Like I did know it was special because during the summer workouts and the off season, like people weren't messing up. We weren't redoing times. I don't think we maybe did one. Reef. He stopped 5 yards short on a 55. And that was the only missed time we had all summer. You know, we went through fall camp and I can kind of hear the whispers of coaches, you know, and like the feeling that they're feeling. They're like, this year is going to be pretty special. This year's I'm being dead serious. They're saying like, this is going to be pretty special because like we were doing some stuff and like, I don't think a coach got like super, super, super fired up. Like most years where they purposely do it during camp, you know? So I knew it was going to be a special season, you know, and to come out on top against USC and have 10 wins. It's sweet. We had an unbelievable career and
feels like riding off into the sunset, don't it?
Absolutely. And we had an unbelievable 5 years and I mean, unbelievable friends and guys and that we'll, you know, be in touch with for the rest of our lives. And I just feel like all the guys that, you know, we played with, it's just like, you can go and talk to them whenever you want and they will be an open door no matter what. And that's the sweet thing about our, you know, our program. But as for what's next for us, we're in the job search and we're kind of fiddling around with some entrepreneurial ventures and we're throwing out some ideas that, you know, we might have coming in the
future.
In the future. And
yep.
Hearing about what you guys were able to do in high school and then you get the college education with the college networking and the Iowa football networking and everything, I have a feeling the Paulson bros are going to have some pretty good products.
They're going to land on those two left feet that they got.
I'm going to have to agree. I think the
– feel like they're going to have a trucking company, a landscaping company. They're going to have a brewery.
Yeah, I think you guys are going to need someone to do your books is what's going to happen because I think you guys, I mean, like you said, everybody, if you make it through 5 years as a Hawk, it's hard to not be successful. Like it just turns out that way. So,
and we've got a few thousand loyal Iowans listening to this podcast that have now heard all of the skills that these huge human beings have, and they're just, you know, willing to help you out. So I feel like you guys might have just gotten some great marketing for your entrepreneurial adventures.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And we appreciate it. And man, what you guys are doing is incredible. And we truly, truly, truly do appreciate it, you know,
and believe in the Iowa program and believe in you guys. And yeah. It's cool. Shed some light on.
We're just
we appreciate that.
Sorry, man. Shed some go Hawks.
Tears. that's it. We have set the record for the longest Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast. It was,
and we have also set the record for the most you knows. I started counting at 12:51, and we have 136 you knows out of the Paulson brothers.
I love that. And
we honestly tell wow. Like. People that are going to interview us, that's our filler word. We say it instead of we say, you know.
It's better than I get trashed.
It's hilarious. Because I started catching on to it, too, after you guys mentioned it.
After you mentioned it, I was like, huh, they actually do say it a lot. I'm going to start counting.
If you go back and listen to Tristan Wirf's episode, count his.
He says a lot, too. I noticed that.
Does he?
So
see, I don't notice it unless you point it out.
So, man, I think it was in the cards the whole time that when we had the double, we got the twins sitting across from us. It was probably going to take a little longer. And I am so happy that it did. This is my favorite episode. I swear to God, we did the Tristan episode, and I thought, holy shit, this is my favorite episode. And then we literally recorded the Gervais episode 2 hours later. And I thought, dude, now this is my favorite episode. And now we've done it again all in the last week. And what really sucks is we're just setting a precedent that we cannot keep up.
We cannot sustain this level of productivity.
So, snowball's rolling.
What was that?
The snowball's rolling.
It's rolling. And
slight edge,
and
baby.
And when we get 6-7 feet of snow, we're going to need you two to come remove it for us.
Got it. Let us know if we can do anything for you guys.
No, man. Same with us.
Name goes away, man.
Hops by a million.
Let's go.
Yes, love to hear it, man.
That's it. Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, hope you guys enjoyed this podcast, and hope you guys have a great day. Walk-Ons out.